Hagman & Hagman Report. We are joined with Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sengari, as well as Dr. Frederick Krantz for the next few minutes. Doctor, while we have you, can you again tell people about your latest book and where they can find you on the internet?
Well, you can check me out on, you can Google me, and I do many different things. My major field was, I was trained in European intellectual history, and particularly in the Italian Renaissance, and I wrote a book on the Italian Renaissance in comparison with 17th century Holland. I did this book on popular movements in Europe in the 18th and 19th century called History from Below. I published in the history of anti-Semitism, and in recent years, in part because of the problem of American policy in the world, I became more and more interested in World War II and in the kind of America that was able to fight the war on two fronts and defeat fascism and defeat the Japanese and the Nazis with half the population and one quarter of the resources we have today, the greatest generation, that kind of stuff. So by all means, check me out and look. You can come to my institute if you go to cijr@isranet.org, cijr@isranet.org. That'll bring you to our website, which will explain who we are and what we do, and very importantly, our work with students. Before the commercial, I was talking about campuses, and one of the things that the Canadian Institute for Jewish Research does is to work with students on campus, and not only Jewish students, by the way, non-Jewish students as well. And in that regard, I would read to you, just if you give me a moment, just a sentence from a recent piece by Clifford May, who works with the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. And in this piece, May points out the following, and I quote him: "On America's campuses, so-called activists are deeply concerned about trigger warnings and microaggressions and so on. But the massacres of Christians in Muslim lands, by contrast, seem to trouble them not at all." Unquote. And I would say, by extension, many on our campuses are not troubled by the lack of concern with growing anti-Semitism on campus, with attacks on the very existence of the democratic Jewish state of Israel. And we should be very clear that BDS, boycott, divest, and sanction, is pointed at delegitimating Israel, which makes it possible to destroy Israel as a state. If the state isn't legitimate, like every other state in the United Nations, then it's legitimate to destroy it, which is, of course, the general thrust of Arab Arab politics to this day. So our campuses are a big problem. The larger culture is a problem. Campuses are not ivory towers. They are the places where future culture, future ideas are fought out and where they become hegemonic. So what happens on campuses is crucial, and if freedom of expression, if respect for the other, for true diversity, is lost on campus, then our society is in peril. I think we're looking at a grave threat to Western civilization, which has emerged in the period from the 70s and 80s onward.
Well,
hello. Yep.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. And that's again, folks. This is Dr. Frederick Krantz.
Joe, I think the money quote here was, we've got a bunch of flippant snowflakes in these campuses across America who can't get. I mean, they wear diaper pins on their lapels. Or, well, they don't even have lapels. They wear diaper pins. They're more concerned about these microaggressions, as the doctor said, yet we have wholesale genocide, and it's frustrating to even think about this and to even talk about this. History is being.
You realize history is no longer being taught.
Yes,
on many campuses, you cannot even take a course in the history of Western civilization. They don't exist.
It just boggles my mind. I mean, yes, and anything that would be characterized as history, in my view, is nothing more than revisionist history, where the Jew, and excuse me for saying this, and I'm so sick and tired of seeing this on the internet. I'm tired of the indictment of the Jewish people for everything from 9/11 to whatever the latest malady might be. It's not. The anti-Semitism has got to stop, and here we have. I don't want to go on a rant, but yes, you've made some excellent points here. How can we best help you, Professor? How can we best help you?
Exactly what you're doing now, the kind of programming it seems to me that you're doing, and bringing someone on like Sargas. Sargas is a remarkable person because he is both a thinking mind, an intellectual. He is familiar with theology, but he's also an officer. He has been an officer in the United States Army, and he is a man of immense experience, and he's fought. He's been in Iraq, and he's been in Afghanistan, and he knows what he's talking about, and he has confronted evil. When he spoke in Toronto last week, I mean, one of the things he said was that we are facing evil, but we're not prepared to deal with it because we really, our culture has so developed that we don't know what evil is, and therefore we can't respond. I mean, a major question here is why this lack of awareness, concern, outrage on the part of the population and much of the population, not all, but much, but also on the part of our government, our elected government. Have we heard one speech by the President of the United States condemning the persecution of Christians in the Middle East? Anything?
No, in great part.
Which is why I think, again, that the election is so very important. It's not so much that I personally think that Trump is the best thing since sliced bread. I just think it was crucial that the Democratic Party be defeated, that the liberals, extreme liberals, be defeated. That there be a change in government and a shaking up of things, and we may see, you never know, because we shouldn't be too overconfident about politics as they're currently waged. But we really may see, and I hope that we will see, some substantial changes which can play a role in waking up the population. But what you people do on a program like yours, I think, is a great what we call a mitzvah, a great. Good deed, and more of that has to be done. Sargas has to be supported. People should be supporting his Assyrian fund. He's got a movement now to raise money to support the Assyrian people in and around Mosul and the Nineveh Plain, and people should donate. And maybe he can tell us a little bit about that, as long as he's here with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Professor Krantz. Much appreciated. I couldn't have said any better. I know that you referenced the Toronto speech, and part of what we discussed there is that, I truly, being on the ground, I've seen evil, and it's put me outside of my comfort zone. So I've fought against it, and it's tried to kill me physically on the battlefield, and I've had to kill it. The problem is people who live in the West don't have to go through that process. Even the churches who preach about good and evil haven't faced evil. They don't understand what is happening. Nobody's coming into your church and killing your parishioners and burning your church or decapitating you. It's just not happening, so you don't face it, you don't understand it, and over a period of years and years and years. And I think one thing that I said in Toronto was that if you haven't experienced it, that is a prerequisite in order to personalize the realities of that evil, so that you're not out inside of that comfort zone anymore. And unfortunately, the Assyrian church has been devastated because it was Assyrian church that was mentioned in Peter 1 that actually took on the mantles of Christianity when God sent Jonah to Nineveh. He never sent any of his prophets to any other nation to preach, except when they preached inside of Israel or when he sent them to to Nineveh to preach to the Assyrians who converted to Christianity. And they took this mantle of Judeo-Christian values that we call today and the Judeo tenets and spread it throughout the Middle East. All of Iraq was Christian. They spread it all the way down into as far east to Africa, as far south to the Arabian Peninsula, as far east, I should say, into the India, China, and Japan. The reason why we're Christians today is because of the root of Christianity. And what is happening in the Middle East is that evil militates around good. That's why they tried to destroy Israel, and they've been trying to do it for the past 68 years. That's why they're out there trying to destroy the root of Christianity, which are the Assyrians, because, as I've said it before, they know exactly what they have to do to kill the possible peace in the future, not just in that region, a blessing in the region, as God has called it, when you have Egypt, Israel, and Assyria established in the region. But to be able to wipe out this blessing, this capability of having this Western democracy that is in pockets that exists in Israel today, that could exist in an area where you have Assyrians controlling their own destiny, where you have Armenia that is controlling his own destiny, where you have Lebanon pocket of Christianity that is controlling their own destiny. And unfortunately, if we do not do anything about it, then I think it's going to be a not just a bad reflection on the United States. The U.S. has to take credit for allowing the destruction of the root of Christianity in the Middle East under its watch. It cannot blame anyone else.
One of the things that has to be recognized here is the role of Islam in the events that we're looking at. And the we have a president. We have a president who refuses to pronounce the two words Islamic terrorism, for fear that this will infuriate the Islamic world even further. But I don't think you can deal with evil without naming it. That seems a fundamental proposition. And where you have Islam, historically, you have the notion of infidels, and you have the notion that Christians and Jews are jimmy, they're subject people, they're people of the book, they're allowed to exist, but they are subordinate, and they have to pay the jizya, they have to pay the head tax, and so on. They're kufar, they're infidel, they're subordinate, second rate, inferior. And that attitude is something that permeates much of the situation of Christians and earlier of Jews, and by the way, it is part of the reason why a Jewish state is unacceptable to so many Arab Muslim countries, including the Palestinian Authority, because Jews are supposed to be subordinate. They're not supposed to be sovereign, and they're not supposed to exist on land which was once yours or which you claim. This is the height of impertinence, and it is to be opposed. Now, I'm not saying that all Muslims are vicious, evil killers. Certainly not all Muslims are terrorists, and so on. But all terrorists are Muslim. And there is some connection there that should be made. We shouldn't be fearful of making it. And we shouldn't be cowed into non-critical thinking by being accused of Islamophobia. You know, that's an absurdity. We have to think clearly and humanly, and we have to be humane. But we aren't a sovereign Western country in the U.S. or in Canada. And we have to think clearly. We can't act clearly if we don't think clearly. And I'm reminded here of something I brought up at the Toronto conference last week, and that is the great observation of the wonderful Jewish philosopher Emil Fackenheim. F-A-C-K-E-N-H-E-I-N, Emil Fackenheim, passed away about 11 years ago. He wrote a book in which he said, you know, the Hebrew Bible, he was a Holocaust survivor, and he wrote on the Holocaust. And he was a major supporter of Christian-Jewish dialogue as well. And in writing about the Holocaust, he observed that in the Hebrew Bible there are 613 commandments. 613 mitzvot. There are the 10 major commandments, but there are a whole series of other commandments. which an Orthodox Jew is enjoined to perform. And he invented a 614th commandment. And the 614th commandment is, thou shalt not give posthumous victories to Hitler. No posthumous victories to Hitler. That is to say, we have to defend humanity. We have to defend human values. Of course, for Jews, we have to maintain our Judaism and defend ourselves against anti-Semitism. But the 614th commandment has a much larger human import, I think. And that is, you have to fight viciousness. You have to fight evil. You have to overcome it. And that is a cultural work. That is a religious work. But it is also a political work. It's a political work. When you're dealing with the IS movement or ISIS or Daesh in Iraq and Syria, you're dealing with evil. There's nothing else to call it. Hitler was evil. And this is evil. These are people who murder others because they're slightly different, who take delight in this, cutting off people's heads and killing children. It has to be crushed. It has to be dealt with. It can't be allowed to spread. And that is a work of civilization. And I think to some extent we have forgotten that. We have forgotten that power has to be used in the interest of the good, as well as, of course, used badly in the interest of the evil.
No, Dr. Kranz, you're exactly right. And I think Lieutenant Colonel Sangari said it best when he talked about, you know, getting out of that comfort zone. You know, it's a blessing and a curse, you could say, for people in the Western world not to have to face, you know, what you talked about, Colonel, about, you know, people coming into your church and setting it on fire and beheading, you know, your fellow congregants there, and you don't have to stand up and fight that. So you're in a comfort zone, and the levels of evil are not in your reality and in your perspective. And as you said, Doctor, we can't be indifferent to the evil. We have to confront it, regardless of what level of evil we are up against. And many of us feel helpless here in America, you know, sitting back and wondering what we can do to help. And you guys have laid out how you're helping and how our listeners can help you, and I want to thank you very much for doing that. And you know what? Well, we have both of you here. Turkey. If we can talk about Turkey for a second, what is your guys' opinion of their real agenda? Because we see Russia taking an active role, and we see the U.S. taking an active role, saying one thing, obviously doing the opposite. But what's Turkey's real objective in this, as we see them taking a more active role in the talks and the two nations of Iraq and Syria?
Well, I think Sargis probably knows more than I do, but just let me say that Turkey has played a very negative role in Syria, because Turkey from the beginning has supposedly opposed Assad, but it has done very little to overthrow him, in fact. And Turkey has allowed in the early years IS to penetrate through their borders and set up their evil state, their evil caliphate in northeastern Syria. So, of course, Erdogan is an Islamist, Sunni Islamist, and he has moved to take over Turkey, to create an Islamic, functionally an Islamic authoritarian quasi-dictatorship. It's not even clear that there was a real rising against him. There are certain scholars who argue he actually manipulated that rising so he could, in fact, you know, tromp down on it and impose his final sort of dictatorship. So I think Turkey plays a very equivocal and unbalanced negative role, even though Turkey is, of course, a member of NATO. But it certainly isn't playing a creative role in trying to bring a decent ending to the Syrian thing. Far from it.
Just to kind of add on to that, Doctor, when I was downrange in Iraq between the 7th and 27th of October, Turkey had moved three of his armored heavy brigades along the lines of extending roughly between Cizre and Hakkari, and that was opposite to where Iraq is, which is opposite of Zahu and Darok in Iraq, and his commando air assault brigade was on short notice. His goal was when he introduced forces into Iraq, and there's Turkish forces in Iraq, and I don't know if that's understood by some of the listeners, that it was to cut off the west of the Mosul Dam area we talk about, trying to stay out of Mosul, but head towards Tal Afar. And Tal Afar is where we have the Hashish Shabi, which are now recognized by the Iraqi government as being their security apparatus. What they want to do is designate them as their anti-terrorism force capabilities. He had moved his ancient howitzers into the area and his Italian helicopter gunships. Now, with that said, that's a tactical piece, right? How's that working? When we announced that we're going to start the Mosul clearing operations, majority of the high leadership in ISIS escaped. How did they escape? Where did they escape to? They didn't escape into Syria. They escaped through the Kurdish regional government lines and literally went into the cities of Duhok, drove into Erbil, and everybody's familiar with what I'm talking about. It's almost a two-hour drive, and flew out into Turkey. They're a NATO ally, but they've been going back and forth. We realized when we killed the leadership of the financial leadership of ISIS in Syria that Turkey was buying oil, which was ISIS oil. And that oil was being transported Lebanese plated trucks through the Kurdish regional government area into Turkey. And they were selling it on the market. So, you know, all this stuff is now open source. Now, here it is recently when Europe came back and said that we're going to have to put a hold on our discussions whether Turkey should enter the EU. He literally threatened again that he's going to open up his borders and they're going to have to deal with the refugees. He's using the refugees as a weapon system in order to hold Europe hostage in order to get billions of euros from them. So this is your ally in the region, and this is an ally that now is going to probably try to fight a proxy war in Iraq, because Iran has pretty much expanded its footprint thanks to our previous administration providing targeting support for them to be able to have a footprint in the region to where they are now in the Syrian plain also.
Well, he's the guy who Obama called his most reliable ally in the Middle East.
He was, but that same ally was the one who turned around and said, I want you to give me the Muslim cleric that is sitting, Gulen, that is sitting in the United States. So, he's a bully in the region and uses his capabilities to threaten Europe, to threaten the region, and at the same time, ISIS operators have moved in and out from his borders. And let's not forget that it was Turkey in World War I that massacred the Armenians, the Assyrians, 750,000 Assyrians were killed because of Turkish genocide, the first genocide of the 20th century, and Greeks. And majority of the ones who actually carried out those killings were the Sunni Muslim Kurds, who have always been guided based on where they sit geographically by Turkey when it comes to what Turkey wants to do in that region, foot-wise.
So a weak read insofar as doing justice in the Middle East is concerned. Indeed.
Exactly. Wow. Well, folks, you're listening to Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari and also Dr. Frederick Kranz from Israelnet.org. And what a tremendous gift to our audience, the knowledge that's being passed here, the information that's being passed along here. I know, Dr. Kranz, that you're a busy guy, and we kept you longer than you had agreed upon, and for which we thank you so much. And we're going to continue we're going to continue on with Lieutenant Colonel Sangari, and anything we can do to help you, we're going to be linking to your site as well, and following along with your with your information. But I want to, as a Christian in America, I want to say thank you to a Jewish Canadian enterprise.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for what you do. And Sargis, Laila Tov.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom, shalom.
Thank you, Professor Krantz. Much appreciated. And I have to tell you guys, Professor Krantz has done a wonderful job. The Canadian Institute for Jewish Research really works off of, funding that comes from various different individuals who are interested in what they're able to provide service-wise. So, you know, just like the United Syrian Appeal that raises money for the military families of the Syrians that are fighting to keep the roots of Christianity alive, same thing for them. We are individuals who are basically working off of out-of-pocket, trying to sustain these efforts.
You guys, you know, individually but collectively, you guys are act like force multipliers with one another, and it's just amazing. Folks, you're listening to Lieutenant Colonel Sangari, NEC, well, Near East Center
for Strategic Engagement.
Thank you. I'm
NEC-SE.com
right.
is the website. And again, want to thank Dr. Frederick Krantz for staying a half hour over time. But when we come back, Lieutenant Colonel Sangari, for the final 30 minutes to close out this segment, this very informative segment, talking about Iraq, talking about Syria, ISIS, and how this chaos continues to unravel in the Middle East, where it is, where it's going, and where it should head right after this. Stay with us.
Welcome, folks. The Hagman and the Hagman Report. As we walk into our final segment here with Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari, you know, the information that you're listening to this evening in this particular broadcast is so critical because, as you heard, you know, history is not being taught in the classroom. We're watching history unfold through the mass genocide of Christians, the removal of Christianity, essentially the wiping out of Christianity in the Middle East. And look who the players are that are behind this. And you have to ask yourself why, to what end. And of course, there's a lot of biblical prophecy built into this. I certainly believe that. Now, before we get back to our guest, if listeners might recall, we had Cindy from Water by Cindy on here not too long ago to discuss her water system. And I've got to tell you that we have been using this water system. If you go to waterbycindy.com, that's waterbycindy.com, this is one of the most amazing water filter or water treatment products I've ever seen, because you can actually change the pH in water you can have pure drinking water that, or you can actually adjust the device and adjust the pH, and what that does is it creates it creates different pHs, but you can actually turn your water into when you wash vegetables, for example, you can create the exact pH necessary to wash vegetables and eliminate all of the toxins from the vegetables just by soaking them. I've seen this and I've watched this work with amazement, but it provides pure drinking water on a daily basis. Save tons of money in bottled water, filtered water, other filtered water. This is an amazing product. Waterbycindy.com. Waterbycindy.com. And if you go there, make sure you let them know that you heard it on the Hagman Report. You're going to be hearing so much more about this. Waterbycindy.com. Investigate this. This is, again, the real deal when it comes to treating water and making water into something that's drinkable, that's pure, that is actually will work on a number of different levels for whatever your needs are. Waterbycindy.com, waterbycindy.com. Joe, I'll kick it back to you, sir.
Yeah, since 8 o'clock, we've been joined by Lieutenant Colonel Sangari. We're talking about Iraq, Syria. We're talking about the Assyrian Christian population that has been decimated by ISIS and the Western forces that have been backing it. Mr. Sangari, I got a question from a listener here, and it's about ISIS, and why have we seen so many women from Europe and a few from the U.S. join or wanting to join ISIS? Can you give us some...
Well, recruiting processes, yeah. Look, there are certain tenets and certain philosophies that lead to what we've been talking about, these concepts of evil. And it doesn't matter where you are, those concepts, depending on the tenets that are taught to you, how you absorb them, can lead you to become a terrorist and wanting to join to be a terrorist. That's just a reality. And the recruiting process is all the same. It doesn't matter what age group you fall in. And one of the problems that we are running into from the United States is concerned because we don't understand. Let's take an example. We're talking about Syria, how the fabric works of a certain location. We have no concept about the history of Syria. We know absolutely nothing about it. Yet we are pouring money, sacrificing our young Navy SEALs to die on the battlefield to support what? Destruction of the current government, let's say. Okay,
yeah,
Assad is there.
There's no clear goal.
Yeah. There's no clear goal. There's no end state. When I am a soldier who dies and there's no end state, and when I have no clue what the State Department wants to do in the region, and the State Department has pretty much washed their hands under the current administration of what's happening in Syria, it tells me that you have absolutely no care about what is happening to your own folks. Our guys are precious to us. They shouldn't just die on the battlefield if you don't have an end state, you don't have a political objective you want to achieve in the region. Okay, you want to get rid of Assad. What reason? Who can better clean up Assad in the region than Assad can? Okay? Now, if he is doing the same thing that Saddam did, which was to kill and oppress these Islamic radicals, then what would be the problem if you allow them to do it? Now, you say, no, Assad has to be gone because he's a evil guy. Well, he crossed the red line. What did you do about it when he crossed the red line by using chemical weapons? Nothing. So, if you're going to do nothing, and your credibility is already shot when you decide to do nothing, then why don't you allow the individuals who understand the fabric of how Syria is established to clean itself out? That means you have to allow the people that are currently in charge of the region to do their job. Don't meddle in the region. That doesn't mean you have to leave and get rid of your footprint. It seems that the current administration might be working much closer with the Russians, who are themselves struggling in the region. But as we fought in World War II on the same side to destroy the Nazi Germans, there's nothing that says that a new alignment cannot be done with Western powers to go after the ultimate enemy that we're all facing, which is this radicalization and just Islamic radicals are out there. And the fact is that these young women and young men that are joining in Europe and are trying to even go into Syria to fight on the ground, these individuals come from a certain philosophy. And it's not that difficult to turn them into fanatics. And now, when you turn around and you see that the fabric of those societies are destroyed, I don't care. You could bring them here. You could make them American citizens. You could give them a job. They will always remember the fact that the only reason they're here is because we absolutely messed in a region where we shouldn't have messed in the way we did. Okay? And I don't know if that really answers that young lady's question, but it's the philosophy. Look, when I was in Toronto, I told them that the Judeo-Christian heritage is what has provided the philosophical and political foundations upon which the American Republic and the Canadian Confederation, all the free societies of the modern world, were constructed on. The Assyrians, when they took on the mantle of Christianity 2,000 years ago, were the ones who embarked on this mission in order to be able to fulfill their calling, which was to spread Christianity throughout their region. And they did so. And this is where they became the bridge between that first covenant, or the old covenant, as we say, on the Christian side, with the Jewish people and the and Christianity, the Christian covenant, that we all supposedly believe in, and the churches are supposed to preach about. So the Assyrians truly became this bridge between the ancient Israel and modern Christianity throughout the world, and by doing so became bound to Israel. Became the lead of world Christianity. The reason they're being killed is because of that reason. The reason they're being eradicated is because of that reason. And the reason why Israel is under tremendous pressure, has been attacked for the past 6 or 8 years, is because of the same reasons. This is, if you want to call it a philosophy, the only philosophy that allows you to have actual true democracies in our region is these Judeo-Christian tenets that we're talking about. And as you start wiping those out, whether it be in France, in England, in the United States, then another philosophy is going to take that vacuum, and the philosophy that is going to take that vacuum is the same philosophy that is allowing Islamic radicals to dictate what they believe are the Islamic tenets. They should be used to crucify, kill, maim, butcher, rape Assyrian Christian women, children. When they cook a child in an oven and feed him to his mother and their family members, this is not made up. This is actual report on the ground of what they're doing. You can't call that evil. You are devoid of humanity, and you're not a Christian. Just go join whatever club you want to join. You live on a separate planet. If that doesn't bother you, and you say that that's not my issue to deal with, then obviously you have no role for humanity on this planet individually. You know, I was speaking to the folks in Toronto, and I referred to the first question that man ever asked God, and I know that the last time he had talked, the commander tried to, look into that specific request. The first challenge that was placed by man to God was when Abel was killed by Cain. And Cain asked God, am I my brother's keeper? And God came back to him and said, what have you done? Your brother's blood is crying. Same thing. The Syrian brother's blood is crying out of the ground that it was opened up to receive his blood, her blood. What are you doing about it individually? What are you doing about it? Tonight, after this broadcast is over, you're going to go to sleep. You're going to get up the next morning, watch your sports programs maybe, watch the news, go back to work. You're not going to care. If you truly care and you want to save the Assyrian Christians, which is the root of Christianity, so that that evil doesn't come to the United States, so that evil, you don't have to ask the questions like the young lady is asking, as to why is it joining, converting its mentality or self-radicalizing itself in Europe and going to join, the rest of its evil brethren to kill and maim others, then you need to save the root of Christianity. The Assyrians need a place. They have force capabilities. Give them the training and the equipment you're giving to their enemies who are killing them, who are abandoning them on the battlefield, who are now replacing them with their own ethnicities and Assyrian them a plane. This is on an American's watch. Look, America is not just this piece of land property that you see on a map with borders, and now we may build walls that says this piece of terrain is America. The increase of terrain has nothing to do with America. America is an individuals. Mm-hmm. It is what you believe in. When our founding fathers in this country were looking at all these concepts of enlightenment, religious theology, Judeo-Christian values, they didn't know how to grasp all these ideals, these things we talk about in academia, and try to encompass them in what an American would be after they receive their freedom. And they realized the only place they could basically make it come true is in the individual. So what happens from the time the individual is born to the time he dies? He should have the right to free speech. He should have a right to be able to bear arms to defend himself. And every single thing that came through the Constitution that we have established and every single thing that we have debated over years to be where we are as a society today is captured in an American. So when a Christian Assyrian is dead in the Middle East because you, as an American, whether you're in a State Department job, saying yes, sir, yes, ma'am, to your boss who is an incompetent, individual who's freaking absolutely destroying the roots of Christianity in the Middle East. When you're a Department of Defense person and you're freaking following those rules, when you're somebody who's sitting in Department of Justice, you're justifying why the Christians of the Middle East should be killed by giving weapons to the people who are killing them, then the reality becomes that you have forgotten what it means to be an American. You are really not an American.
Amen.
You have abandoned your concepts.
Exactly. We are more than a piece of real estate. We are an ideology. We are a thank you for saying that, for articulating that. Just a couple of kind of wrap-up questions here, Lieutenant Colonel. Joe had asked me, or Joe had handed me a note. What about the UN? I know America's place. We got that. America's absence. We understand that. The silence. Don't accept it, but see it. What about UN?
Especially the UN, with the new security Secretary General Antonio Guterres and his socialist tyrannical.
What do you expect from that, if anything?
The UN briefed the Syrian Christians on the on 26 February of this year that the areas which are Assyrian in the plain were going to be used to build camps to be able to take care of the refugees that are directly coming out of the Mosul fight. That was a year to date when the Khabar River Valley, when the Assyrian Christians only had 38 villages in Syria, were cleared out. So instead of talking about bringing Assyrian displaced people to settle in those areas, they designated areas that they were going to bring others, which are non-Assyrians, and settle them in the Assyrian Nineveh Plain. On the day, year removed from when the Assyrian Nineveh Plain, the Khabar River Valley villages were cleared out. This is the UN. When I was in Jordan, we dealt with the refugees in Jordan. For them to go through the process of being recognized to maybe even having their package be looked at by the United States government is almost taken a year. One of the families that we met there, the family members were accepted, but the husband, because he was during the U.S. invasion in the Iraqi army, they asked them four times to come back, and they interrogated him literally for 8 hours. This is UNHCR. He had to draw them pictures and layout of what the bathrooms in his headquarters of the unit he served with looked like in Iraq. And they didn't let him take a bathroom break. They didn't let him eat. This is the process they put him through. They didn't tell him when their case was going to be resolved for him. When his wife went to the UN in Jordan headquarters trying to get an answer, 5 times she sat there for 4 hours and nobody even opened the door to talk to her. Finally, somebody saw her and said, "You know, I've seen you multiple times here. Let's take a look at your case. This is your UN." And these are actually very capable people who actually care about this process.
Oh, man. Okay.
Sad.
That answers that question. That fully answers that question indeed. All right. What can we best do to help you, Lieutenant Colonel? What must we do? What can we do as a listening audience, as a platform to help you?
Well, first thing for us, I'm going to be honest, and it's embarrassing that a lieutenant colonel 20 years serving in the U.S. Army, I get to actually say, you know, guys, gals, if you can, please donate to the United Assyrian Appeal, because that's the only way we can sustain these families downrange. But it is what it is. My government's not doing anything to help them out. Millions are going to who? To people that were trying to kill my friends when I was downrange. Congratulations. There's your enduring ally. I mean, they should all be fired. Every single one should be fired. But, you know, United Assyrian Appeal is where we need donation and support. The other thing I would say, pick up the phone, call your congressman, and say to the congressman, what are you going to do in order to support this joint force that the Christians have agreed upon? Are you going to fund them directly, or are you going to hide behind the fact that foreign military sales process that State Department has and that the sex state advocates for that budget has to go still to the same individuals in the GOI who are now resettling that area for their benefit? Or the Kurdish regional government who are actually abandoning that area and are flipping those areas for a price for the GOI to have?
Right.
The other thing I would do is pick up the phone and call the main media press and say, listen, why are you not asking these questions? Why isn't anybody over there asking that how come these villages have been destroyed after declaring operations? How come the Shabak villages stands without any destruction, but the Assyrian village next to it was completely destroyed? The same army went and cleared it. What happened? And then I would say again, we need money for support for the United Assyrian Appeal. I cannot sustain this fight any other way. I'm sorry to ask, but we have no other choice.
I don't think apologies are even needed. It is what it is, as you state. And you know, we all have a choice: who we support, who we assist, who we support. And this, having spoken with you in August, and having watched everything unfold since your first appearance, and now this appearance. It's more important today more than ever in my belief that we support your efforts, because it's not going to get done any other way. It saddens me, 4 months, really 3.5 months after your first appearance, here we are, and it seems to only have been getting worse in the deafening silence from our Christian, I would say, folks listening to this, take the link to your pastors. Take the video or the audio video to your pastors, and we need a grassroots effort. There's a lot of things, a lot of initiatives, but this is an important one. Wow!
If anybody wants to hear us speak, I can come to any church and, you know, educate them. That's what the Near East Center tries to do, to educate them.
Yeah.
And let them make the choice. Eventually, I mean, you at the end of the day, you have to make the choice. But look, the root of Christianity is dying. The only possible ally that in the state of Israel would have in the region or the United States is being eradicated. And we're allowing it to the destruction of the United States. It makes no sense to me why we are allowing this to happen. We are leaving a black mark on Western societies, on the United States, you know, and it shouldn't happen. I'm proud of my country. I don't want my country to have to live with the stigmatism of what it did 100 years ago, 100 years from now.
Hmm. Well said, my brother. You know, we've reached the end of the program. I'm just so thankful to have you leading the fight, being the tip of the spear in this, as hellish as it is. You're doing wonders. You and your team are doing wonders in despite the odds. And the odds are tremendous. Wow, we're going to keep you in our prayers. We're going to uplift you, and certainly we're going to keep soliciting financial assistance for what you do, and ask others to do the same.
Well, there's a third person in this lead, so he's really the one who's guiding us. And, you know, like I said, when we've been nothing in the coffers, you know, suddenly he's opened up doors for us. And without what we had received in the United Assyrian Appeal, we would have been able to go downrange to see what happened and give money to the filthy families. And I'm going to be able to sit here and tell you, here's the updates of what's happening to our folks. And I'm hoping that, you know, we're on the right track. But, you know, if we're not, he'll tell us, you know, he's smarter than you and me. So we've been on the right track. We just got to get there. America, Israel, and Western societies need to have an Assyrian enduring footprint in the region. Christianity needs it. Christianity cannot survive in the region without having the Assyrian Christian having their own footprint, period. It won't happen. It won't happen.
No, it's not. You're absolutely right. Lieutenant Colonel, thank you so much for your time this evening. And I know you're a busy man, and I know that, what a tremendous, what an insight every major media outlet should be talking with you and getting this story out there. Of course, we know that they're not. So, standing in the gap to do the same, sir, to do just that. Lieutenant Colonel, thank you. May God bless you. And we're going to talk again soon. Hopefully, you'll come back as well at some future point. We're going to continue these conversations because we need to keep the dialogue going. We really do.
We'll do, guys, and thank you very much again. All right. And again, I'm sorry to say, but, you know, for us, you know, www.UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org, it's very helpful for us. And hopefully we'll see you guys back again.
Indeed. All right. Thank you, Lieutenant Crum. Lieutenant,
God bless you. You stay safe.
Yes, sir. Indeed. Wow. Folks, you heard this. This is history being made right now, and you heard him. You heard him describing the plight of the Christians in the Middle East, in Iraq, and in Syria.
And if it's hard to listen to, it should be.
Yes. Thank you.
As what's, you know, going on over there is, as the Lieutenant Colonel described, as some of the most inhumane and evil behavior, you know, non-human, even to the point. I mean, this the level of depravity and evil.
You remember, Joe?
I mean, cutting out people's hearts.
Yeah, you remember that little girl?
Children. Yes, I do.
There was a blip of outrage, and then nothing but the little Syrian girl that was chained to a fence.
Back when we did the private investigation work. When you started HomelandSecurityUS.com, when you ran those beheading videos, I remember you watching those.
Oh yeah,
and just, I remember the sounds. I remember, and it takes a lot to stomach something like that.
And
worse,
he's
even,
living it.
Worse even is what has been coming out of from ISIS.
Yeah,
and
if that's
it's
even possible,
easy,
you know,
to see the headlines and not click on them and to, you know, disregard this, but we continue to do that. It will be on our front door. It'll be things that we're dealing with in our own towns and cities ourselves.
It's already here. It's just in stasis. I that's kind of my feeling.
Oh yeah, and a good example that you know, just today, ISIS newspaper hailed the Ohio State terrorist.
There you go.
And has called for more terror attacks, calls for a continuation of attacks on America. And the Islamic State prominently featured the Ohio State terrorist in their weekly newspaper today, along with a call for others to continue jihad on America, highlighting the Orlando nightclub attacker and the latest Saudi Ohio State attack, which was stopped without any fatalities aside from the attacker on the Ohio
without
State
fatalities
campus.
But not without, you know, leaving
right.
a mark.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's only going to get worse if we turn a blind eye to it here in America. If we don't pray against it, if we don't do what we can to stop it, it will be here.
Joe, if I can take a second, just I want to thank Lisa Haven for inviting me on her program. Lisa Haven, What a tremendous researcher in the alternative news media. She's got one of the most popular alternative news YouTube channels. Go to Lisa Haven. We'll just search her on YouTube. I'll put a link up on HagmanReport.com. But thank you, Lisa, and your dog Diesel as well. It was a great time. Joe, I'm going to kick back to you there.
Yeah, tomorrow we got a great show for you. We have Paul McGuire in the first hour coming on to talk about the
important stuff.
Man. Yeah, the satanic ritual aspect, from this rape gate, as John called it earlier.
Pedogate, rape gate, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and the importance of that. And then he's going to be followed by Justin Peters from Justin Peters Ministry for hours 2 and 3.
With a little Justin more Peters on the current Ministry. Events.
Yes, and it should be a great show. And then we got a jam-packed show for you next week. And I'll be on Dave Hodges on Sunday.
Yeah.
And tomorrow's Friday. So until then, stay safe. God bless. We'll see you back here tomorrow.